So the Eben Ezra says that is the tachlis of lighting the menorah, that the light that the menorah generated in effect turned the night into the day in the Mishkan, and this was to enable Moshe to talk to Hashem 24 hours a day. The lights had to be on. And that's why the Eben Ezra therefore says the last pasuk of Naso talks about Moshe talking to Hashem in the Mishkan, and that's why it goes to Menorah right away. Meaning the Menorah was really for the benefit of Moshe Rabbeinu himself, to enable him to talk to the Shekhinah for 24 hours a day. By the way, this concept that when you have candles, the night becomes the day, this is actually reflected in halacha. You know, there's a halacha that a Beis Din is not supposed to meet at night. It's a halacha in the Gemara. But the Sma, one of the commentaries who lived a few hundred years ago, wrote that if you have candles in the room, and certainly today, lights, a Beis Din is allowed to meet because it doesn't have a din of Laila, it has a din of Yom. So again, you see it from the Eben Ezra. But Rashi's explanation to why Hadlakas HaMenorah is mentioned is very, very well known. And Rashi says, because when Aaron saw the 12 Nisim, each of them brought the identical offering for the 12 days of the dedication of the Mishkan. And that runs from Rosh Chodesh Nisan to the 12th of Nisan. Aaron had Chalisha Sadas. Aaron felt very depressed. Aaron felt despondent. Aaron felt, why doesn't Hashem want my korbanos? Why does Hashem, why does He not ask me to bring a korban? And Aaron thought, perhaps it's because I'm undeserving, because I still have the chait of the ego. So Hashem tells Aaron, right after these korbanos, don't feel bad. I'm giving you a mitzvah that is even greater than their mitzvah. I'm giving you a mitzvah of menorah. Now the Ramban, this is what Rashi says, the Ramban quotes the Medrash a little differently. And he says, why is your mitzvah greater than their mitzvah? Because their mitzvah of korbanos is only when there's a Beis HaMikdash. And when there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no korbanos. But your mitzvah of lighting the menorah applies both when there's a Beis HaMikdash and when there's no Beis HaMikdash. This is the Medrash that the Ramban quotes. So the Ramban then asks a kasha on the Medrash. What do you mean that your mitzvah is whether there's a Beis HaMikdash or there's no Beis HaMikdash? You know, just like there's no korbanos when there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no menorah when there's no Beis HaMikdash. I mean, good, we have our menorah, but the mitzvah of lighting the menorah is part of the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. So in what way is it shelcha, your commandment, gadol mishelahem? So the Ramban himself gives a well-known answer that maybe this is an allusion to the mitzvah of Chanukah. That we know that who were the people who were instrumental in the miracle of Chanukah? It was the Chashmonaim, it was the Kohanim. So maybe what Hashem is telling Aaron here is that your Hadlakas HaMenorah shall be memorialized eternally in the history of the Jewish people when people light the Chanukah candles. So, in effect, although Chanukah is a post-biblical holiday, it's very, very much after the whole Tanakh, not just the Torah, nevertheless, there's a remez to Chanukah in Baal Oscha. This is what the Ramban says. But the Bali Musar offer a different explanation. In other words, the question is, in what sense is Aaron's lighting the menorah a mitzvah that is forever? And they say that the menorah, as we know, is a symbol. The menorah is a symbol. The light of the menorah is a symbol to the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the light of the Torah. Torah is called light, and the menorah is a symbol for Torah. In fact, we find that there are two symbols. The shulchan, on which you put the lechem hapanim, the showbread, every Shabbos, that is the source for the blessing of Parnassa. And the menorah, which is the light of Hashem, that is the source for the blessing of Torah. So the halacha is brought down that although wherever you daven, you always face the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Let's say you face east. But if you need Parnassa badly, you should face northeast. You should turn in the direction of the Shulchan, which is Parnassa. And if you need Torah, most of us need Torah, you should turn southeast, because that is the direction of the menorah. And Chazal even say that in Eretz Yisrael, the greater Torah is to the south, and the greater Gashmias is to the north. Tel Aviv, Yerushalayim, I guess. Although B'nai Barak, okay. But Be it as it may, I always say in my show, because when my show was constructed before I was there, because of the architectural layout, the Aron HaKodesh is not east. The Aron HaKodesh is north. So I say that we obviously have our priorities wrong. Everybody's mispowel to the north, which is your mispowel for money. You know, at least if it's going to be the wrong direction, at least let it be the south instead of the east, which is for Chachma. So the Menorah is the Or Torah. Now, if you think about this, it's very interesting, because the question is, there seems to be duplicative symbols, though, because the Aron HaKodesh is, of course, and the Kodesh HaKodeshim is, of course, a symbol of Torah, and the Menorah is a symbol of Torah, right? So why do you have these two symbols? So the Mefarshim say that the Aron represents Torah Shebichsav, which, after all, it is. The Aron contains the Luchos, which is the written law that Hashem gave. And the Menorah represents the light of the intellect, which is the oral law, which applies the Torah, interprets the Torah, tries to understand the Torah. In effect, Torah Shebichsav is very static. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to you, and there it is. And to some degree, it's really inaccessible, because it's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's really beyond. These are the words of Hashem. Torah Shebal Peh is the human being who enters into the partnership with Hashem to try to bring light into the world. That's why you see a very interesting thing. The Torah that is alluded to in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is just what Hashem gave us. That's static. That's there. The Menorah is the light that we generate every day. You see, the Menorah is lit every single day. The Menorah... The Menorah is the collaboration between Hashem and human beings. I think I've given you this mashal before, that it is part of Hashem's love for the Jewish people, that He wants them to be the partners with Him in the creation of Torah. The example would be if you wanted to make a cake with your children. So you could do it all yourself, which is more efficient and probably quicker, or you can involve them in the process. When you involve them in the process, even though it's messier, it's not as clear, it's not as accurate, that is how you show your love for them. So you see, the Aron HaKodesh is Hashem's Torah, but the Menorah is the Torah that we generate through our learning and our work and our understanding. That is the light of the Menorah. So Menorah represents the Or HaTorah, as compared to the Shulchan, which represents the Parnasa, as compared to the Aron HaKodesh, which is Torah Shebichsav, but the Menorah is the Kayach of Torah Shebal Peh. Mitzvah of lighting the menorah lasts forever, but rather what Hashem is telling Aaron is this: good, the Beis Hamikdash has korbanos. Korbanos are wonderful. Korbanos create tremendous kedusha in the world, but they only last as long as there's a Beis Hamikdash. But the light that you bring into the world, symbolized by the menorah, that's the light of Torah, the light of understanding. That is a koach that exists forever and ever and ever. So it's not the menorah per se, but it's the light that the menorah represents, the light of the Shekhinah, the light of the Torah. Now the Chafetz Chaim writes, again, it's almost a pashut observation, but it's something to think about, that at the very beginning of the world, what does the Torah say in Bereishis? That the land was Tayu Vavayu. Tayu means it was astonishing in its emptiness. Tayu. If there would have been an observer, of course there wasn't, the observer would have been astonished. Vavayu, and he would have been confused. And all there was darkness. And how did Hashem deal with the darkness? Hashem didn't fight the darkness, because you can't fight darkness. If you punch the darkness, it doesn't really respond. But Hashem said, let there be light. And there was light. And the Chafetz Chaim says that the way Hashem fights the darkness in the world is by creating light. And we have to emulate Hashem's ways. And we dispel darkness by creating light. That's very significant. In other words, you don't, you know, spend your life, as it were, trying to uncover the shortcomings of others, trying to criticize, trying to undermine, trying to be negative. But the cheshech of the world gets dispelled by the light that we create. You know, I had the reason I wasn't here last week, I had the dubious pleasure of being in Las Vegas last week. Not for, it was for speaking, it wasn't for gambling or anything. But in Las Vegas, you must have seen the pictures, you know, you have the hotel strip, which has, you know, miles after miles of casinos, 5 miles. And they must use millions and millions of kilowatts in the middle of the night, like brights, like the day. So sometimes there's the light that dispels the darkness, which is the light of the Torah. And sometimes there's the light that just brings more darkness into the world, like the lights, you know, the lights of the casinos and everything else. So there is the or, which is Docha the Choshech, and this is the or which creates the Choshech. All right, you have two types of or. But the or of the Menorah is the or which creates Choshech. And in that way, the Ramban makes the point, that's what he means when he says that Menorah is forever. The Koach of Torah is forever. In fact, if I could digress for a second, this is how the Sfas Emes understands a very interesting machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. I know you've heard the machlokas. How do you light Hanukkah candles? Which, of course, is a commemoration of the menorah. Beis Shammai says you start with 8 and you go down, right? 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. Beis Hillel says, like we say, that you go up. So the Sfas Emes says, what's the logic of the argument? So the Sfas Emes says very beautifully that fire has two symbols. Fire can destroy and burn out, and fire illuminates and gives warmth. And they're arguing, what is the way that one becomes closer to Hashem? So Beis Shammai visualizes the way you become closer to Hashem is by confronting your evil midos and destroying them one by one by one by one. So the appropriate analogy would be, there's less to do as you grow, meaning you start off with 8 things you got to burn away. You successfully got rid of one of them. Now you got 7, 6, 5, 4, 3 till you've purified yourself. That's Sur Meira. Turn away from the evil, and that should diminish as you go on. Beis Hillel says, if a person is too involved in focusing on their negative attributes, on their own negative attributes, they often have despair, depression. They often feel they don't have that kalach to go out. So Beis Hillel says, you don't focus, even in tshuva, you don't focus predominantly on your negative attributes, but you try to create positive lights. You do mitzvahs, you do chesed, you work from your strong points. And in that sense, the imagery of light is not the fire that burns and destroys, but it's the fire that illuminates and gives warmth. And in that sense, you build up from 1, 2, 3, 4 mitzvah, bereris mitzvah, etc. Okay, but I want to raise one question, though, one halachic question. I really have two halachic questions, but let me raise them both here. Question number one is, the mitzvah of menorah is given here as a mitzvah given to Aaron. Now, Aaron is a Kohen Gadol. Now, the truth of the matter is, every single day the menorah was lit, just to be sure we understand the order. How did this work? The menorah was lit, Bein Hor Bayim. It was lit at night, and it burned the entire, or towards the evening, and it burned the entire night. In the morning, the Kohen would come, and generally speaking, most of the candles had been burnt out. There was, of course, the Ner Tamid, which was never burnt out, but the Kohen would then extinguish it. In other words, it burnt, but there's a mitzvah every morning to extinguish that candle, and you clean out the oil, the burnt oil and the burnt wicks. It's like a Hanukkah menorah, you know, you have to clean it out. And new oil and new wicks would be put in. And that was done in the morning, and that is called Hatavas Haneros. Hatavas meaning to make the candles good with new oil, new wicks. But the Hadlakas Haneros was not done until the evening. Hatava was done in the morning, Hadlaka was done in the evening. Even Hanukkah, contrary to what most people think, most people have the vision that the Hanukkah candles burned for 8 days of 24 hours, 8 times 24 hours. But that couldn't be, because there's a mitzvah every night to light the menorah. They put out the menorah every day. The miracle was that the oil was there, and the oil kept on burning when they relit it. But they actually would extinguish the menorah every morning and relight it at night, because there's a mitzvah of hadlakas menorah. You can't just let it burn. Just like, for example, in our own menorahs, if Hashem would give us a miracle, if our Hanukkah candles would burn 8 days, we would still have to put them out every night, because there's a mitzvah of relighting. Now the question is this: the Rambam paskins that hadlakas hamenorah, hadlakas, not hatava, hadlakas hamenorah doesn't even need a kohen. Even a Yisrael could light the menorah. Aye, the only question is, a Yisrael is not allowed to enter the Heichal. You're not allowed to enter that part of the basement because it has the menorah. So the Rambam says, if a Kohen would take out the menorah, a Yisrael could light it outside, and then it could be brought back in. That's kosher. The Minchas Chinuch says that wouldn't be kosher because the menorah has to be lit in the right location. The analogy is that you're not supposed to light your menorah, let's say, on the table and then move it to the window. It has to be lit where people can see it. But the Minchas Chinuch says, even if we don't accept the Rambam's case of how a Yisrael lights the menorah, he gives another case. Let's say I have a real long stick, 100-foot long stick, and it's there's a little flame at the end, so I could stand outside of the Beis HaMikdash. I could take my long stick, and if I could reach the menorah, I could light it. That would be kosher. So the question is this: if hadlakas haMenorah can even be done by a zor means a non-kohen, then why all of a sudden is there a reference here to Aaron lighting it? Why is it Aaron's mitzvah at all? So the Sepurna, the great Mefarsh, the Sepurna, gives us a tremendous chiddush. The Sepurna says that for the 40 years that the Jewish people wandered in the desert, every single day had the Kedusha of Yom Kippur. Every day in the of course they were allowed to eat, but in terms of the Kedusha, every single day had Kedushas Yom HaKippurim. Why? Because the Anan HaShem, the cloud of glory of HaShem, was over the Mishkan. That was the Shechina. That was the intimacy that one would normally have in Yom Kippur. Therefore, the Sepurna says, there is a halacha on Yom Kippur. All of the avoda had to be done by a Kohen Gadol, only on Yom Kippur. But since the Mishkan had the halacha of Yom Kippur, the Ketores, which is not being discussed here, Ketores normally could be done by a regular Kohen. Here it had to be done by the Kohen Gadol. And Menorah, which didn't even have to be done by a Kohen, had to be done by Kohen Gadol.
What about Hatzavas HaMenorah? That's something that anybody could
do. No, only a Kohen. That's my second question. I'll discuss the anomaly there. That's really, I'll get to that shortly. Now, the Vilna Gaon doesn't quote this point, but the Vilna Gaon says the same thing. The Vilna Gaon says, based on this idea, that Aaron was permitted to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim every single day of the year, provided he brought all the korbanos that you bring on Yom Kippur to get in. And the Vilna Gaon says it's very meduyik, because if you read Parshas Acharimos, which sets up all of the korbanos that need to be brought to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the funny thing is, you know, we're so used to, we know that that's Yom Kippur, so we think Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur. If you read those psukim, Yom Kippur is not even mentioned till after the whole parsha. In other words, it just describes, bring this, bring A, B, C, D, E, and F, and go into the Kodesh HaKadosh. We know, oh, that's only Yom Kippur. It doesn't say that. It says, L'doro Seichem, in the future generations, so shall you do on the 10th of Tishrei. So the Vilna Gaon is medayek, that Aaron could enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim any time he wanted, provided he followed the ritual. That ties in exactly to the Sepurna, who lived hundreds of years earlier, that every day had the Kedushas Yom Kippur, and that's why the menorah had to be lit by Aaron, although what? Although normally the menorah could be lit by a non-Kohen. Didn't even need a Kohen. But here is the question I want to raise. This is the question that you just touched upon. Let's focus for a moment not on the mitzvah as it applied in the desert. Let's focus on the mitzvah as it applies in the Beis HaMikdash. So the menorah at night did not have to be lit by a Kohen. It could even be lit by a non-Kohen. Although it would be an unusual case, you'd have to be standing outside. But in the morning, there's this mitzvah called Hatavas HaNeiros. Now, Hatavas HaNeiros could only be done by a Kohen. The Yisrael couldn't do that. It didn't have to be the Kohen Gadol. But the cleaning out of the oil, the putting in of the oil, the new wicks, only a Kohen could do that. So if you think about that, that is really an anomaly in Halacha. Because Hatavas HaNeiros seems to be nothing more than a preparation for the mitzvah of lighting. The main thing is to have the menorah lit. You can't light a menorah unless you have oil, unless you have wicks, unless you clean out the charred portions that were burnt. But that's preliminary. Why should it be so that the Torah is more insistent on the qualifications of those who do the preliminary activities, the preparation, than it is for the actual mitzvah itself. All right, in the Midbar, everything's the same. Aaron did everything. But once you're out of the Midbar, Hatava requires Kohen, although not Kohen Gadol. Hadlaka, which is the main show, main event, even in Israel, anybody could do it. Anybody could do it. So, on one level, you see an important thing, that very, very often the Torah is machshiv, the preparation we bring to a mitzvah. More importantly than the mitzvah itself, the efforts, the preparation, the behind the scenes, the undramatic gestures. The analogy would be, imagine you have somebody who's making a chasna. So one person cooks the food and buys the food and sets the table and puts up all the furniture and gets the band there, but the room is totally dark, so if you'd walk in you wouldn't see a thing. And then somebody comes in and turns on the lights and now claims credit for the whole endeavor by saying, without me you wouldn't see anything, I turned on the lights. Yes, but the turning on the lights allows you to see all these beautiful things only because somebody worked for them. So the truth of the matter is that one very important lesson of Hatava and Hadlaka is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers the enablers to be of more significance sometimes than the actual entity that may do the final dramatic mitzvah of bringing light into the world. Again, certainly for women it's a source to keep in mind. In many situations women are in the role of enabling members to do various activities, and here we see that that's really Hatava Saneros, where the Hadlaka Saneros seems to be the act that brings the light into the world, but it is the Hatava, the enabling of that, which is considered to be the ultimately more significant activity, which requires only the Kohen and not a Yisrael. Yisrael cannot do that. There is a very, very special midah to be able to do. That's, you know, one thing, and, you know, again, it's something to keep in mind. There is, however, a deeper spiritual meaning in this, and that is looking at the imagery of ner. You have to understand the word ner. The word ner in Tanakh and in Chazal does not really mean candle the way we use it today, because they really didn't have solid wax candles. A ner is a lamp, and by a lamp we mean it is a receptacle. If you look at an oil menorah, right, so the cup in which you pour the oil, the cup is called a ner. So if the menorah's light is the light of Torah or the ner is the human neshama, which is a candle, a receptacle to receive Hashem's light. How do we know this? This is a pasuk in Mishlei as well. Ner Hashem, nishmas Adam. The neshama of a person is the candle of God. But see, candle, receptacle. That the tachlis of our lives is to make ourselves a ner, to be makabel Hashem's light. The Sfas Emes says, this imagery of the human being being a receptacle for the aura of Hashem is implicit in the very word for neshama, or one of the words, nefesh. Nefesh is an acronym for ner, receptacle, pesila, wick, and shin is shemen, oil. We are the oil, we are the wick, we are the receptacle. And we are waiting to receive Hashem's light, which will ignite us. Okay, that's the whole avodah. So spiritually, hatavas haneros, to prepare the ner, is a remez to how we prepare our neshamas to be mekabel Hashem's ner. Right? Very literally, right? You clean it out, you remove the dirt, right? You get rid of the scorched pieces that have not burnt very well, right? That's the replenishing. Now, if you look in the Parsha, there are a number of remazim, although only the beginning of the Parsha talks about menorah. There are a number of remazim as to what are the spiritual things you do to yourself to make yourself a kli, to be mekabel Hashem's or. First, going to the end of the Parsha, we obviously see that humility is a very important quality, because the concept is only through anava are you empty enough to receive Hashem. If you're too filled with your own stuff, there's no room. Right? There really is no room. But I just want to mention a few miscellaneous things, and that is, one way we prepare ourselves is by the thoughts and hachana we bring to a mitzvah. That very often we go into mitzvahs, we just do it, you know, Shabbos becomes Shabbos, so we're into it, but we don't really think about a Pesach or a Shabbos or a Yom Tov. There's no machshava involved. And part of the hachana is the spiritual machshava. There's a beautiful word here, Rav Schwab used to recount it, from Chafetz Chaim. Rav Schwab had a famous conversation with Chafetz Chaim when Rav Schwab was a young man. Chafetz Chaim was obviously very old, and it's a well-beloved conversation that's recounted in a lot of different places. And the Chafetz Chaim asked him, you know, it says in the Medrash that the man tasted like whatever you wanted it to taste like. You wanted steak. There are only five things the man couldn't taste like. It didn't taste like garlic and certain cucumbers, because this would affect the milk of nursing mothers, and children wouldn't like garlic or onions in the milk. So it couldn't taste like that. But everything else it could taste like. And yet we find that right after they leave Har Sinai, all of a sudden the Jewish people complain about the man. They don't like the man. It's boring. It's dry. The Chavetz Chaim took whatever he wanted to take. So the Chavetz Chaim asked Rav Schwab, let's say you were eating man like chewing gum. You were just, you know, walking, chewing the man. What did man taste like if you didn't consciously think about it? So Rav Schwab said he had no idea. So the Chavetz Chaim said the man had no taste at all. Because the man is ruchnius, the man is spiritual. And spiritual things don't have a taste unless you think. Ruchnius has no tam unless there's machshava. Meaning to say that when we say the man could taste like whatever you wanted to taste like, that meant if you were tzaddik, if you thought about what the man was, if you had hakaras hatov to Hashem, if it strengthened your emuna, then it gave you the most delightful, pleasurable taste. But if you took it for granted, you didn't think about it, you just chewed it like you chew chewing gum, there was no taste. And indeed, that's why they complained. There's no taste to the man. It's boring. And the Chavetz Chaim says, this is the idea of ruchnius. Now, of course, it's good to do mitzvos even without kavana, because that brings us to kavana, etc. But he made the point that if one does mitzvos mechanically, without thinking, without preparation, they are not going to affect him very much. There's not going to be time. So that's really one lesson that we see from the man. The importance of the fact that how meaningful an experience is for you is a function of how much you prepare to receive it. And that's one level of hatavas, haneiros. The second thing we see, just looking at the different aspects of the parsha, is that a person prepares themselves to receive the light of Hashem by their desire and their cheshek to serve Him. And here, the proof text to that is Pesach Sheni. Again, it's all in yesterday's Parsha. In Parshas Balosra, what did we have? This is 1 year after they left Mitzrayim. They're about to bring a Korban Pesach in the Midbar. This is the second Korban Pesach. By the way, this is the only Korban Pesach they brought in the Midbar. In other words, they had Pesach in Mitzrayim. They had one Korban Pesach in the Midbar. And they did not bring another Korban Pesach for 40 years. The next one they brought were in the days of Yehoshua. So all of a sudden...
Why didn't they bring Korban Pesach?
Yeah, so there's a machlekes. Some say because the mitzvah of Pesach is really a mitzvah that depends on V'haya ki yiviyacha, only when they come to Eretz Yisrael, and Pesach Midbar was an exception. Others say because the children that were born in the desert did not have bris milah, because it was a sakana for them. And if you have children who don't have a bris, you're not allowed to have Korban Pesach. So for that reason. So all of a sudden we have a group of people that say, Lama Nigara, we are Tamei. We can't bring a Korban Pesach. Why should we not have the chance to bring a Korban Pesach? Now who were these people? There were different interpretations. According to some, these were the people, Mishal and Al-Safan, who carried out the bodies of Nadav and Avihu, who had died in the Mishkan. Others say these were people who were carrying the coffin of Yosef. They were Tamei. And they said, why shouldn't we have a chance? Now, you'll notice that, why didn't Hashem give Pesach Sheni? In other words, why did Hashem wait until people asked and then gave them a second chance? They could bring the Korban Pesach 1 month later. It's not Pesach a month later, but those who could not bring the Korban Pesach are given one day, the 14th of Iyar, where they could bring a Korban Pesach. Why didn't Hashem build it into the first place? Because why didn't Hashem just say, when he gave the mitzvah of Pesach, if you're Tameh, you get a second chance? Moreover, what are they complaining about? I mean, they're Pater. If they're Tameh, they were doing a mitzvah, they're Pater. I mean, imagine how we would feel if we would get a phone call from HaKadosh Baruch Hu before Pesach saying, you don't have to do it this year. You're Pater. Would many of us, I don't know, I can't speak for others, but would many of us argue, would many of us say, no, I want to do it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you don't have to do it. And yet we see that these people had such a desire to serve Hashem, such a cheshek, that they literally refused to accept no for an answer. When they asked Moshe, there was no option. But the Chiddush Yerim says, you see from here, that when you truly desire to serve Hashem, He opens the door for you. But the door wouldn't have been open had they not asked. In other words, there would not have been that second chance if they would not have shown how much they desire it. So it's not that the way you normally understand it, that there was such a thing as Pesach Sheni, but Moshe just forgot it or whatever, and therefore he needed to be reminded. The Chiddush Yerim learns there would not have been this opportunity had they not shown. And of course, this is a tremendous lesson where HaKadosh Baruch Hu opens up numerous opportunities to serve Him and to grow. But the doors are open when we decide this is what we want to do. And until we make that decision, the doors remain closed. There's a beautiful quote, I don't have it in front of me, from Lahavdil, the German poet Goethe, where he actually says this. He talks about the fact that the great secret of life is how doors are open when you make the commitment and you make the decision. Things that seem so impossible while you're in that state of indecision all of a sudden melt away when a person decides, this is what I have to do. And this is the lesson of Pesach Sheni, that when you truly want, Hashem opens that door. If you didn't want, if you rely on your exemption, so Hashem's not going to give you a second chance. All right, that's fine. You want your exemption, I'll let you have it. It's similar, the Gemara makes the point that in the earlier generations, people would go out of their way to obligate themselves in mitzvahs. The example it gives is, if you have a farm and you thresh your grain, so in order to be chayav to take off the truma and the maser, the grain has to be brought through the entrance of your home. So in the old generation, they used to bedafka make a point of bringing the grain through their entrance. In the later generations, they would bring it through the skylight in the roof, through a window, they would bring it through various alternative entrances, so it would not be chayav in truma and maser. Now is that a sin? Is that an avera? It's not an avera. They took advantage of exemptions. But it showed a lack of truly loving. Again, I mean, I can't pass judgment on it. I mean, I know Rav Heinemann occasionally writes on a similar vein about the idea of going away for Pesach. Again, Chas Shalmuth, it's perfectly legitimate to do it, but he made the point that sometimes there is an inyan, if we're up to it physically and emotionally, there is an inyan to indeed show how much we care about a mitzvah by the effort that we devote to that mitzvah. And one decides what one needs to do for their family, etc., but there should always be a little bit of a pang of regret that I wish, I would be able to, as it were, put in all of those kochos. So that is the second thing, the idea of the desire, the cheshek, the lesson of Pesach Sheni, that if you truly look for that opportunity, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will open up the opportunities. There's a third element, though. All of these are related. We talked about thought, machshava, that's the lesson of the man. We talked about cheshek, desire, which is the lesson of Pesach Sheni. And the third goes back to the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is machshav above all, these struggles that we go through, that more important than the end result. In fact, that itself is implicit in why cleaning the candles is more chashuv than lighting. That more important than the result that we achieve is the struggle that we go through. You know, we say this to our kids in school, etc. The trouble is, we don't always mean it necessarily, and because it's still true that in the hierarchy of achievements, you know, the A plus is higher than the C, who tried harder, right? But the emphasis is, it really is true that in our Kaddish Baruch Hu's cheshben, the schar and onesh is based on how much effort and yikia did we put into serving Hashem. Now, people sometimes ask me, well, so that's unfair. That discriminates against bright people. In other words, what are you telling me? You're telling me the person who works very hard, gets all the reward. So Nebuch, if somebody was blessed with an ability to, let's say, learn very well and very quickly, so that's their fault? But the answer is very passionate. The answer is, there is enough work in the world for everybody to do. Meaning to say that it's true that if the person who's very bright only accomplishes what the person who's very slow is, yes, the person who's very slow will get more schar because that person worked harder. But our answer to the bright person is, whoever, not bright, whatever midah it might be, is you have to find something too that you have to aspire to, that you have to work to, that you have to struggle. In every mitzvah, this is true. A person who was born, let's say, in the Hasidic family in Borough Park, kept Shabbos all of his life. And then you have somebody who grows up in South Dakota and doesn't know anything, but tries to keep Shabbos to the best of their ability. Even that their parents are, like, I knew kids in NCSY, for example, who came from non-religious homes, where the parents were not only not religious, which is one thing, but they were hostile and antagonistic. And they would not allow, you know, the child to have a Shabbos meal or to light candles. And I heard stories of kids who would, you know, go into their bedroom and light Shabbos candles secretly and try to say Kiddush while their parents are watching TV or watching movies in the next room. And maybe was their Shabbos 100%? No, maybe it wasn't 100%. But in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshben, how is that going to compare? The one who suffered and the one who was humiliated and the one who was alone, but they tried to serve Hashem to the best of their ability, and someone else has it so easy. So Hashem's schar will be greater. So then you'll ask, am I not penalizing the chassid who was born in Borough Park? No. The answer is, the chassid who was born in Borough Park has to go beyond the externals of Shabbos and reach higher levels of internalizing. In other words, the point is, there's always a challenge. There is no human being in the world that says there are no challenges for me. And therefore, everybody has equal access to that closeness to Hashem. But the access is a function of the struggles that we go through. And that's the meaning of the verse in Iyuv. Adam la'amal yulat. Very, very simple. A human being was born to toil. Of course, it shouldn't be an unpleasant thing, but the point is, the concept is to struggle, to go beyond ourselves. The Vilna Gaon reminds us that there's no such thing as simply being in place. When a person is not in a process of aliyah, there is automatic yirida. There's no such thing as being in place. Now, I have to qualify that, though, with a little fun, interesting thought that from a Hasidic Rebbe, I'm not sure if the Gra would agree with it, but I think the thoughts may be consistent. You know, there's a famous Maimer Chazal that we say by Balei Tshuva, that it says, B'makayim she'Balei Tshuva omdin, the place where the Baal Tshuva stands, Tzadikim gemurim einam yecholim lamod ba, even a perfect tzaddik cannot stand. In other words, the superiority, as it were, of the Baal Tshuva who comes to Hashem in spite of their past, etc. But that's the simple meaning, but this Chassidus Rebbe wants to the remark that you'll notice the emphasis. The place where the Baal Tshuva stands. The emphasis is that sometimes the Baal Tshuva has to know to stand still. Sometimes the process of tshuva is not moving full speed ahead. And that's the meaning. The Baal Tshuva stands. The Tzadik Gomor has to keep on going. The Baal Tshuva has to know to stand still. Because all of us know that there's a pacing in, and of course, for for this purpose, we have Baal Tshuva Kaminolos. All of us are Baal Tshuva. I mean, whatever our backgrounds might be, because all of us, if we have anything for which we have to do Tshuva on, we are Baal Tshuva. In fact, somebody once told the Gera Rebbe, he was a Talmud in Or Sameach, so he told the Gera Rebbe somewhat apologetically, but I'm not a Baal Tshuva. The Gera Rebbe looked at him and said, why not? Why aren't you a Baal Tshuva? But anyway, so the thing is, there is this concept of standing still. There is a concept of not wildly just taking on every single, you know, chumrah and every single shita and every single anaga, because very, very often if we take on too much, we crash. And if we crash, we lose the madregos that we've already achieved. And keep in mind, there is a rule. You should never take on any chumrah in halacha if it is going to undermine a halacha. Now, let's take a very simple example. Shalom bayis is a halacha. So to take on a chumrah which is going beyond halacha, which is going to undermine shalom bayis, doesn't make any sense at all. Because what you're doing is you're taking on an optional stringency which is going to hurt something that you really have to have according to the strict halacha. So that's why you need a cheshbon, because we tend to get fixated on a certain thing, but that'll be to the neglect of other things. There are so many examples. This will be a cheshbon. Let's say a woman wants to, a woman has a lot of young children, and a woman wants to daven, let's say, the full tefillos. In other words, all of Pesukei Zimra, all of Korbanos, Mincha and Maariv, which is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. In other words, in the abstract, if we say, is it a good thing to say all of the tefillos? The answer is yes, it's a good thing. It's a proper thing and a nice thing. But you can't just ask the question in the abstract. If it's going to impact on, you know, will you be able to make supper, be able to take care of your children, etc., 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 there are going to be balances. So this is what this Rebbe said, that for Baal Tshuva, meaning all of us who are not yet tzaddikim gemurim, there is a level of avodas Hashem that is omeid, to know how to stand still. But I would argue that doesn't contradict the Vilna Gaon statement, right? The Vilna Gaon said, on the other hand, when you stand still, you're always going down. Because part of standing still is not the standing still of complacency and the standing still of not caring, but it's the conscious decision that I need to balance all of my imperatives in a proper way. In other words, standing still is also growth, and standing still can also be movement, because it's part of a person's spiritual decision making. What the Vilna Gaon is condemning is the concept of inertia, resting on your laurels, living in a rut. But this Rebbe is making the point that sometimes you can grow by not moving, so to speak. That's also a movement that's internal. And besides, also, we like to have the illusion of growth by doing more external things instead of saying, let's say, daven more, we could say daven better, right? We could say, don't say as much, but focus, right? But those are harder. Those are the harder things to do. The internal tikkunim are much, much more difficult. So all of that is the idea, the subtlety of standing still. Okay. But going back to how you see this in the menorah is, the oil of the menorah had to be kassis. Now what is kassis? Kassis means the first few drops, the olive is squeezed. You squeeze the olive. And the first few drops that come out without any sediment, very, very clear oil, that is for the menorah. Now, what you then do with the olives is you put them in an olive press. You've seen a big heavy beam. And you put this 2,000-pound beam on them. And then, overnight, you know, a lot of other oil comes out. That's grade B oil. And that is not kosher for menorah, but that is kosher for meal offerings. The flour mixed with oil, menachos. We darshan, kassis lamaor, the Torah says. Those first few drops are needed for the light of the menorah, below kassis lamnachos. But for the mincha offering, the flour offering, you don't need kassis. Now, the difference is kassis represents the drops that come out by human efforts. Grade B comes out by dead weight and inertia. And maybe the remez is that the light of the Torah comes to us through human effort, not inertia. And that's why it's kassis. In fact, the Kutzk Rebbe used to say like this. The Kutzk Rebbe used to say, in a slightly different vein, kassis, human effort is what God looks at in Torah. But for menachos are making a living. In the world out there, they don't care about your effort. they care only about your bottom line. Kasis is what Hashem counts for Torah. For Menachos, which means, you know, making a living, Kasis doesn't make a difference. And Chavetz Chaim used to say, this is the meaning we say at a Siyam when we finish a volume of Gemara. We say, we thank Hashem for allowing us to learn the Torah, and we say, Anu Amelim, we work, and they work, the rest of the world works. Anu Amelim, we work, Umekablim Schar, and we get reward. Vehem Amelim, they work, and they don't get reward. So the Chavetz Chaim asks, what does that sentence mean? I mean, people work and they get paid for it. So he says, they don't get paid for the work, they get paid for the product. Meaning, if you hire a shoemaker to make shoes, and he doesn't make the shoes, all of his effort is not going to help them. Meaning, Chavetz Chaim says, we get reward for the work, not for the success. And in the world out there, as all of us know, perhaps sometimes in a very vivid way, that if one doesn't achieve the bottom line, one can be out of there. And, you know, loyalty and hard work and effort do not count for very much in the outside world. It's what have you done for me lately, as it were. That is the bottom line. And that's how the Kutzke Rebbe says very beautifully. The famous statement, if a person says, Yogati, I have worked to serve Hashem, v'lo matzasi, and I have found no success. So it says, Al tamin, you don't believe him. So the Kutzke Rebbe says, why don't you believe him? Because the work is the success. In other words, it might be the person. In other words, the person might be true. He didn't have any success. But that's a false statement. It's an oxymoron. Because it is the work that is the success. It is the work upon which HaKadosh Baruch Hu works. Again, this is all Pirkei Avos. Lo alecham lecha ligmor. It is not upon us to finish. And that is the idea of kusis. Kusis are the drops that are extracted by human effort. Is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is machshiv the most. Again, this, you know, this gives, you know, this should give us, you know, comfort as we go through life, and there are many occasions. Itself, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is machshiv. It's not up to us to be successful in anything we do, but we have to do what we can. Just one final point. So b'kitzur, just to summarize what we're saying here is, and that is, Hatavas Haneros represents how do you make your soul a receptacle, a ner, to be makabel Hashem. And the three lessons that emerge from various aspects of the parsha are, number one, by the thought that you bring to a mitzvah, that's the lesson of the man. By the cheshek you bring to a mitzvah, that's the lesson of Pesach Sheni. And by the struggle and effort, which is the lesson of the kusis of the menorah. The Bali Musar also make the point that, you know, Aaron, it says Bahaloscha, which means when you step up, that there were three steps in front of the menorah, that Aaron had to go up three steps in order to light the menorah. Now, people ask the following question. We don't know how tall Aaron was. According to some midrashim, Aaron was very tall. But even if Aaron was not a particularly tall, the whole menorah was only 18 tefachim from bottom to top. A tefach is a fist, so it's between 3 and 4 inches. So let's make it 4 inches. So the menorah would be 72 inches. How tall is 72 inches? Well, that's 6 feet. Right, 7 inches, 6 feet. Right, 12 times six. Yeah. So even if Aaron is a relatively short, you know, 5.5 feet, it's not particularly hard to lift up your arms and light the menorah. Right, I could light a six foot menorah. So why do there have to be steps? So some want to say that the steps were needed only for Aaron for the following reason. One of the big day kahuna that Aaron wore as Kohen Gadol was the tzitz, a gold plate on his forehead that had Hashem's name, Yudkei Vavkei. And there is a halacha that you're not allowed to lift your hands above the tzitz. So consequently, Aaron had to be high enough where he could light the menorah with his hands below his head, as opposed to his hands above the head. That's one answer. Which means you don't need a step in the Beis HaMikdash, you only needed a step when Aaron was lighting. The second answer is, maybe you don't need the step for lighting the menorah, but you need the step for cleaning out the menorah. See, lighting, I can light with my hands without looking over the top, but to clean it out, I have to look over the top. That's the second answer. But the Balei Musar say there's an allegorical answer, and the allegorical answer might be that you need to ascend to light the menorah. You need to ascend three spiritual levels, and the three spiritual levels correspond to Pirkei Avos, to talk about the three midos of Avraham Avinu, which is Ayin Tova, a generous eye, that's generosity. The opposite of that is jealousy. The opposite of that is jealousy. The second is Ruach Nemucha, which is humble spirits, modesty. The opposite of that is the destructive midah of Kavod. And the third is Nefesh Shefala, a person who is not overly materialistic and lustful. The opposite of that is Taiva. And Pirkei Avos identifies three midos as the midos of the Talmidim of Avraham Avinu. Ayin Tova, Ruach Nemucha, Nefesh Shefala. The opposites are, of course, the three evil midas of Kina, Taiva, Kavod. Okay, so the three steps means you ascend three of those spiritual levels. Okay, I'll just leave you one short story, and then I guess maybe we'll end here. It says, though, that Aaron did this mitzvah, and Rashi comments, the Torah is giving us the praise of Aaron that he didn't change, he didn't deviate. So people ask, you know, what's the point? Of course, why should he deviate? So part of the explanation, based on what we said, is very good, because it means he didn't deviate means not only did he do the external ritual, but he incorporated in his personality all of these midos that this ritual represents. In other words, that's the shevach, shaloshina. But the lesson, of course, is that the Torah itself is constant, and they tell a funny story about how some people think the Torah changes with time and place. The story is told about a wagon driver who was hired to take people from one place to another place in Poland. It was the middle of the winter, so the wagon broke down, he couldn't make the trip, so the people who hired him refused to pay him. So he took them to a din Torah in front of a rabbi, the rabbi of the city, and the rabbi of the city said, listen, it's not your fault, but you didn't do the job, so you know, you're not going to get paid. So he says, Rebbe, is this your opinion, or is this the opinion of the Torah? So the rabbi said, as far as I understand it, this is what the Torah says, that you don't get paid because you didn't do the job. So the wagon driver asks the Rav, tell me, Rabbi, when was the Torah given? So the rabbi said, the Torah was given in Sivan, Shavuos. He says, oh, now I understand. Sivan is springtime, the roads are good, there are no rain. So of course, you know, if a wagon doesn't show up in the spring, of course you're not going to pay him. But if, you know, if the Torah would have been given in Kislev in the winter with the mud and the rains, then the Torah would have said, you know, the wagon driver doesn't have to pay either. So now I understand. You know, you have to. The Torah was for a Sivan Torah; it's not a Kislev Torah. But of course, the mistake is that good. The Torah was given for Sivan, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu in His Chachma gave us a Torah that applies to all circumstances. In fact, the Brisker Rav made the point. The Brisker Rav made the very startling point that even if you knew that by doing an Aveira you could bring Mashiach, and by your not doing that Mashiach will never come, says you still have to keep HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. And he brought a raya, he brought a proof to this from the Gemara. The Gemara says that Mashiach could be found, whatever that means exactly, Mashiach could be found by the gates of Rome after the Churban, and he was putting bandages on people who were lepers. And the way he did it was, he was replacing the dressings and putting on new ones. So he would only do one bandage at a time. He would take one off, put one on, take one off, put one on. So Eliyahu HaNavi was asked, why doesn't Mashiach take off like five bandages and put on five new ones? He says, no. Because Eliyahu HaNavi, or Mashiach, is waiting for the exact second that he can come. And if he's taken off five bandages, what if it's time for Mashiach to come? He'll have to finish up the bandages, and it'll be too late. So he wants to be sure that he'll never be tied up. That if it's that right time, all he has to do is replace a single bandage. In other words, you see from this, from that Gemara, that Mashiach may have an exact moment, where if it's not that exact moment, it'll be too late. The moment of Schus. And yet the Gemara says, Mashiach cannot come on Shabbos. And the reason is, because of the prohibition against going 2,000 amos, you know, from your house. Mashiach says to come. Now, what if Shabbos happens to be that moment, where all of our Sechusim, justify the means. Okay, that's the eternity of Torah. That's the law. That's the law Shina. Okay, I guess we'll stop here. Okay, have a good week, everybody. I don't know. I think we're running on. These are all extra time at this point. But I don't know if people want a class or not.
People would
come.
People
would
come this morning. People just don't know.
I think I need to have. I don't know if you want to take on the job or not. I do need to have a kind of an official way of getting, letting people notify. I mean, I'm normally here, but there are weekends that I'm not here, so I just need to have some way of notifying people.
If everybody wants to just call before, call me.
Can I ask?